This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and hello to all you irreverent ones.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood irreverent one, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is July the 21st, 2012.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're also based here in Madison, Wisconsin. And we have about 18,500 members and growing, members in every state. And we have two purposes. We serve as the nation's largest association of free thinkers, atheists, and agnostics, and we work to keep religion out of government.
On the second half of today's show, we will hear Bill Moyer's memorable interview with the freethought poet Philip Appleman. Phil is an afterlife member. That's kind of an inside joke of ours. He's an afterlife member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And last week, you might remember, we played just a snippet of that interview that aired on PBS on July the 8th. And today we will play the entire interview. But first, we have some FFRF victories to talk about.
You may remember that we reported last December on a great big foo-foo-rah going on in Elwood City, Pennsylvania. We had a complaint about a city nativity scene.
It was on again, off again, on again, off again.
And now it looks like it is an on again and hopefully a permanent victory.
Well, 7 months after FFRF first protested the city nativity scene, the Elwood City Borough Council in Pennsylvania has agreed to uphold the First Amendment. The council voted down a proposal last Monday night that would likely have brought the nativity scene back to public property, through a lottery system allowing a lone display in front of the municipal building during the month of December. That would have discriminated against non-residents. On behalf of local complainants, we wrote several letters last December, and in late December, the council voted to move the nativity scene to private property. But after things quieted down again, the council formed a nativity committee dedicated to replacing the nativity. That committee wrote what one reporter called a convoluted, complicated, constitutionally bereft proposal that slaps a figurative "sue me" sign on the borough's back. Well, this last week, the council voted that proposal down 4-3, despite a lot of ministerial support. We want to thank FFRF member Stephen Hurdle, who's a local member there who contributed to that victory. Often when you have area residents who have the courage to take a stand, that will make all the difference. So we salute Stephen. And we also want to thank our staff attorneys, Patrick Elliott and Andrew Seidel, for their hard work in ending this violation. Well, then another, hopeful victory in Georgia, Annie Laurie?
Yeah, to set the scene, we do have some local news coverage of FFRF's complaint about a prayer breakfast organized monthly through the offices of the mayor and in Augusta, Georgia. And this is WRDW 12 News out of Augusta, Georgia, reporting on it.
That's 6 o'clock in high definition.
As an individual, I believe in the power of prayer, and nothing's going to change that.
But a national group is hoping to curb the mayor's power to hold his monthly prayer breakfast, and they're setting the stage for a possible lawsuit. It's our top story on News 12 at 6 o'clock. Good evening. I'm Richard Rogers.
And I'm Katie Beasley in for Meredith. The city of Augusta could be headed for a legal showdown over the mayor's prayer breakfast. A national group says the mayor is violating the Constitution. The city says we respectfully disagree.
Well, we got our hands on the official response from the city of Augusta, but the Freedom From Religion Foundation says this is not good enough. We respectfully disagree. That's the word from the city of Augusta after the Freedom From Religion Foundation declares the city must cease all sponsorship and organization of the mayor's prayer breakfast.
Chris, we live in a crazy world these days, and you know, you've got groups out there that are going to have a problem with anything.
The group takes issue with the mayor's prayer breakfast being highlighted on the city website.
Yes, they're violating the Constitution by having city employees coordinating and organizing a religious event.
We call the organization based in Madison, Wisconsin. The problem, they claim, the mayor's assistant asking the public to RSVP to her city email address.
The city has issued the appropriate response. Legally, we're moving forward.
No, I mean, they haven't addressed whether city employees can be using city time and resources to organize inherently religious events like prayer breakfast.
The city notes the mayor is a largely ceremonial position, a weak mayor form of government, and says the commission does not specifically appropriate funds for religious events.
The budget is still offered by the government.
We're not violating any laws, so we will continue to move forward.
Effectively setting the stage for a legal battle.
You know, being mayor is what I do. My faith is who I am, and I feel very strongly about that.
Now, the foundation says this is all the result of a local complaint. They plan to consult with that person to determine their next step. They are drafting a letter as we speak to the city of Augusta, and we will keep you posted.
And I don't have time to read that entire letter, but Rebecca Markert, our senior staff attorney, did indeed draft a masterful reply, about 4 pages. You can find it under news at FFRF.org's website. She went into the law, she went into the policy, and she went into what she found out in her open records request, which did show that the executive assistant to the mayor, Karen Nixon, coordinates monthly prayer breakfasts. She selects the churches. She sends out the invitations. She puts together the agenda. She instructs pastors that they should include ideally 3 scriptural references when they make their prayer. You know, that it includes scriptural readings and opening prayer and remarks by the hosting prayer pastor. All of this conducted by a city. So we did get a hopeful phone call. A phone call from a city representative that made us hopeful that we'll be able to resolve this problem soon.
Well, how about if they have a non-prayer breakfast next year, like we have at our annual FFRF convention, complete with a moment of bedlam instead of a moment of silence?
Well, we will just settle for governmental neutrality. And now we do have a firm victory out of Georgia to report. And I think, Dan, you can talk about that.
The U.S. Army... You know how they say, we want you? Well, we no longer want you to mow the lawn at Catholic charities. We've stopped a violation in which soldiers were being forced to mow the lawn there. The Freedom From Religion Foundation staff attorney, Andrew Seidel, drafted and sent a letter on July 5th on behalf of the foundation, also signed by American Atheists, objecting to using U.S. soldiers to support Catholic Social Services of Augusta, Georgia. The Regimental Non-Commissioned Officer Academy's Advanced Leader Course at Fort Gordon ordered soldiers to provide area beautification support to the Catholic Social Services. So our complainant has assured us now that the program with Catholic Social Services has ceased. And as our letter pointed out, the situation is not analogous to the government contracting with a charity to provide secular services. In this case, the government, in the form of the Army, is giving a direct substantive benefit to a religious organization.
So in their slogan at this Catholic Charities is, in every season, God is with us. So now what you've been saying, Dan, is in every season, they are responsible for trimming their own hedges and raking their own leaves.
Yeah, if they want to mow down the enemy, they have to do it some other way.
So we do not have Onward Christian Soldiers?
No more Onward Christian Soldiers. No more Onward Catholic Soldiers.
And these victories are made possible because of the membership of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who support our work, and they make possible our legal staff. We now have 4 staff attorneys. This summer, 3 legal interns churning out the letters as we speak, practically.
You should see their offices. It's like a beehive up there with letters flying everywhere.
And so we do hope you will join FFRF. There are very few state church watchdogs that give this kind of service for free to members of the public who inform about state church violations.
So stay tuned. The rest of our show is devoted to free thought in the arts, movies, music, and poetry. And you don't want to miss Philip Appleman's interview on The Bill Moyers Show.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And this music, of course, is Thus Sprach Zarathustra, which was played in the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey. The director of that movie, Stanley Kubrick, was born on July 26th. This would have been his birthday this week. He was born in 1928. Kubrick was a film director, screenwriter, producer, cinematographer, and editor, regarded as one of America's greatest filmmakers. His movies include The Killing, Spartacus, Lolita, Dr. Strangelove, 2001, Space Odyssey, A Clockwork Orange, Barry Lyndon, The Shining, Eyes Wide Open. He died in 1999. In an interview, Stanley Kubrick said, "The whole idea of God is absurd. If anything, 2001 shows that what some people call God is simply an acceptable term for their ignorance. What they don't understand, they call God. I chose to do Dr. Clark's story as a film because it highlights a critical factor necessary for human evolution that is beyond our present condition. This film is a rejection of the notion that there is a God. Isn't that obvious?"
So we have a huge free thought connection here. Clark was a filmmaker.
A free thinker, excuse me.
Thus Sprach Zarathustra was written by a non-believer because Richard Strauss was a non-believer, the German...
Richard Strauss,
a German composer. And this young work of his was influenced by his friend Robert Schumann, who was a freethinker. And his piano quartet of 1884 was completed after consulting with Johann Brahms, also a non-believer. Strauss excelled in the tone poem. Also, Sprach Zarathustra is a tone poem setting to music the views of the non-believing philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. And those also reflected Strauss's own views. Strauss's opera Salome was based on a play by Oscar Wilde, who was a very bad Catholic with many free thought views. Strauss's compositions include Elektra, Many Lieder, and Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks that we'll hear at the very end of this show.
The New York Times music critic and a Strauss admirer, Alex Ross, wrote, "Strauss did not believe in God. He saw no spiritual dimension in his art." So there's an awful lot of free thought connections going on here. You can read more about all of these free thinkers on the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Free Thought of the Day webpage at ffrf.org/day.
And speaking of creative people, later in today's show, we will hear the thoughtful interview of Philip Appleman by Bill Moyers from PBS. And Phil is going to read some of his free thinking poetry, but he actually has asked you, Dan, to set some of his poems to music. And so we're going to play what we have time for. First, Fleas.
I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. I think that I shall never see a poem as ugly as a flea. a flea whose hungry mouth is pressed against a buttock or a breast, a flea that spreads disease all day and lifts its little claws to prey. Poems are made by you and me, but only God can make a flea. I think that no one ever made a poem as powerful as AIDS, or plagues that may in summer kill half the bishops in Brazil and share the good Lord's final answer with clots and cholera and cancer. For God concocted pox to mock us, staph and syph and streptococcus. Poems are made by bards or hacks, but only God makes cardiacs. I think that I shall never smell a poem as pungent as a hell, where grinning devils turn the screws on saintly Sikhs and upright Jews, giving them the holy scorcher, timeless, transcendental torture. Poems can make you want to yell, but only God can give you hell.
That is Fleas, written by Philip Appleman, performed by Dan Barker. Fleas is a parody of Trees, of course, and that music is the traditional music. And now we have a poem, original poem by Philip Appleman, God's Grandeur, which Dan set to music and performed.
When they hunger and thirst, and I send down a famine. When they pray for the sun, and I drown them with rain. And they beg me for reasons, my only reply is, I never apologize, never explain. When the angel of death is a black wind around them, and children are dying in terrible pain, then they burn little candles in churches, but still I never apologize, never explain. When the Christians kill Jews, and the Jews kill the Muslims, and Muslims kill writers they think are profane, they clamor for peace or for reasons at least, but I never apologize, never explain. When they wail about murder and torture and rape, when Abel complains about Cain, when they ask me just why I had planned it like this, I never apologize, never explain. Of course, if they're smart, they can figure it out. The reason is perfectly, perfectly plain. It's because I just happen to like it this way. So I never apologize, never explain.
God's Grandeur, written by Philip Appleman, music by Dan Barker, performed by Dan Barker. We're listening to Thus Sprach Zarathustra, written by a freethinker. I am Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. This is Free Thought Radio. After the break, we will hear more from the poet Philip Appleman in his own words, interviewed by Bill Moyers on PBS last Sunday, July 8th.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a 501c3 educational charity that works to keep religion out of government and to promote non-theism. And we hope not someday, but today you will join us at ffrf.org.
Last week, we played a teaser from the interview by Bill Moyers of the free-thinking poet Philip Appleman, who is a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Long-time member.
And a friend of ours, and whom we have interviewed on this show.
And he is the poet laureate of Free Thought. His heads-up column appears monthly in Free Thought Today, which is the publication, the newspaper of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, edited by Bill Dunn. He's our good friend, as Dan said, and a very good member. He is now 85. He and Margie are both afterlife members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And we
were so excited when he told us that he was going to appear on the Bill Moyers show. He's a very distinguished poet, distinguished Darwin scholar, and it's a fascinating interview.
That was on PBS on July the 8th.
And so we are going to play it right now.
This time, our guest is the versatile Philip Appleman, whose creativity spans a long life filled with verse, fiction, philosophy, science, religion, and above all, moments of everyday experience captured like the glint of the sun sparkling through a crystal glass. His latest book of poems is Perfidious Proverbs. A fellow poet said that to watch Philip Appleman sling words is to be richly regaled. I quite agree. Welcome, Philip.
Wonderful to be here, Bill.
I have long thought of poetry as music to be heard best in the voice of the composer. So let's go right to some of your poems.
Good. I love it.
Here's one of my favorites, and I think it's one of your favorites too, Eve. Tell me about that poem.
Eve is kind of reflecting on the snake at first. Clever he was, so slick he could weave words into sunshine. When he murmured another refrain of that shimmering promise, "You shall be as gods," something with wings whispered back in my heart, and I crunched the apple. A taste so good, I just had to share it with Adam. And all of a sudden, we were naked. Oh yes, we were nude before, but now, grabbing for fig leaves, we knew that we knew too much, just as the slippery serpent said. So we crouched all day under the rhododendrons, trembling at something bleak and windswept in our bellies that soon we'd learn to call by its right name, fear. God was furious with the snake and hacked off his legs on the spot. And for us, it was thorns and thistles, sweat of the brow, dust to dust returning. In that sizzling skyful of spite whirled the whole black storm of the future. The flint knife in Abel's heart, the incest that swelled us into a tribe, a nation, and brought us all, like driven lambs, straight to his flood. I blamed it on human nature even then, when there were only two humans around. And if human nature was a mistake, whose mistake was it? I didn't ask to be cursed with curiosity. I only wanted the apple, and of course, that promise. To be like gods. But then, maybe we are like gods. Maybe we're all exactly like gods. And maybe that's our really original sin.
The original sin, hubris, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You've said that's one of your favorites. What makes it a favorite?
Well, I like the personal tone of Eve, who, you know, doesn't get to say anything in the Bible to speak of, and to turn her into a kind of down-to-earth reinterpreter of that kind of tickles me, that's all.
She finally gets to tell her own story.
Right.
Did you ever wonder about the silence in that story of the first woman, as it says?
Yeah. No woman I know would tolerate it.
Exactly. Here's one that we like especially. It's one of the five poems of pagans that you did. And this is one of the short ones. Would you read that one? And by the way, tell us what Mammon is for those who haven't been reading the Bible lately.
Well, Mammon is the love of money and greed, and he's the god of wealth. I call it my Bernie Madoff poem.
Read on.
Oh, Mammon, thou who art daily dissed by everyone, yet boast more true disciples than all other gods together. Thou whose eerie sheen gleameth from corporate headquarters and Vatican treasury alike. Thou whose glittering eye impales us in the X-ray vision of plastic surgeons, the golden leer of televangelists, the star-spangled gloat of politicos. O Mammon, come down to us in the form of treasuries, annuities, and high-grade bonds. Yield unto us those Benedict Arnold funds, those quicksand convertible securities, even the wet Judas kiss of futures contracts. For unto the least of these, thy supplicants, art thou welcome in all thy many forms. But when thou comest to say we're finally in the gentry, use the service entry.
Do you ever go back and say, well, that's one of my first children? I mean, I remember, yeah. I'd forgotten that kid, but now I realize that it is my poem.
Yeah, I love reading the early poems as much as the late ones. I brought along a poem, which it would be an interruption sort of the thrust here, but...
That's what life is about, a series of constant interruptions, Philip. Go ahead.
The first thing you see in this book is a dedication. It's for Margie, my wife. We're looking forward to our 62nd anniversary this summer. And the dedication says, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. But because Margie is home and has had a stroke and is ill, I would like to read a poem for her, if you don't mind.
Please do.
It's from a book called Summer Love and Surf, which came out in 1968, and it's the most beautiful book. It was so beautifully designed that it won the design contest for that year. And it was written when we were living out in Malibu in one of those houses that build on stilts, and it's so far on the beach that at high tide, the ocean is gurgling under your bedroom, and we loved it there. And this is a young love poem, and in recent years I've written poems for our 50th anniversary and our 60th anniversary, which are very old love poems. But this is sort of back at the beginning. Summer Love and Surf. Morning was hesitating when you swam at me through wave on wave of sheet and blanket, glowing like some dimly sighted flora at the bottom of the sea. Around your filmy hair, light was seeping in with water sounds, low growling in the distance like dragons chained. After our small storm dwindled, we faced the rage outside, swells humping up and charging in to curl and pause and dash themselves to soapsuds on the stork-legged pilings of our house. The roar was hoarser now. The wrecks of kelp were heaping food for flies, our long-nosed sandbirds staying close to dry land. Farther out, pelicans arched their wings in quick surprise, and gulls screamed urgently. The call was there. We fought the breakers out and rode their fury back triumphant and again triumphant till at last, ears stuffed with brine and heads a-spin like aging boxers battered, We flopped face down on hot sand, smelling sun and salt and steaming skin. Your eyes were suddenly all sleep and love, there in the sun, with seabirds calling. The sky goes metal at the end, water gray and hostile lashing out between the day and night. Plastic swans are threatened. Deck chairs, yellow towels, barbecues stand naked to the peril as if it were winter come by stealth. Still later, in the lee of dark and warmth, we probe the ancient fear. At night, the sea is safer under glass, the crude wild thing half-tamed to shed its past. Galleons sent to 50 fathoms, mountains hacked to rubble, cities stripped. At night, the sea, barbaric bellows stifled, sprawls outside the window, framed like a dark, unruly landscape. Behind us is a darker kind of dark. I watch your eyes for signals. The music makes a pause for prophecy. Tomorrow, offshore breezes and warmth to each other's warmth. We do not listen.
That was how long ago?
1968.
You had been married?
We had been married 18 years at that point.
I can't tell you, that was Philip Appleman reading some of his poetry on the Bill Moyers Show. I can't tell you how many women I know who were listening to this said that they were tearing up.
That was Philip Appleman reading some of his poetry. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're going to play the rest of that interview after the break, where he talks about free thought here on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord. This show, Free Thought Radio, is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We hope you will find out more about us. Join us at FFRF.org.
We just heard Philip Appleman recite his poem about summertime, summer love. Let's continue listening in to that July 8th interview of the Bill Moyers Show on PBS, where Moyers interviewed the poet, Darwin scholar, freethinker, and FFRF Afterlife member, Philip Appleman.
How does love change from then to now?
Gets more profound, more essential. It was very strong right from the beginning. We met on the first day of French class at Northwestern University in 1946, and we've been together ever since.
She became a playwright, didn't she?
She's a playwright, and her plays have been produced about 60 times, mostly in New York and Los Angeles. I appreciate her work on my poetry and other things I write. She is a wonderful critic. 4 years ago, she had a stroke, and that kind of put an end to her writing. So that was a very sad thrust.
How could you have such faith in love?
It's always been there for me, and it keeps me consciously aware that I'm not alone on this earth yet. We're up in our 80s now, so there'll be a time sometime soon when I will be alone. But while I'm here, the thing that I most value is that love.
Is that the source of the meaning in your life? I mean, you had this remarkable essay that had a profound impact on me a few years ago on how the meaning of life comes out of the moment you're acting, out of your choices every moment of how you will live that life. Meaning is not out there, you say. It is in the doing of the moment.
Right. You create your own definition. You create your own meaning as you act. I was brought up in a small Indiana town, went to a fundamentalist church, and when I was about 13, thought my mission was to be a missionary to darkest Africa and bring the message. That cleared away in a couple of years later. But
why did it clear away?
I kept reading books and finding out things, and after a while I realized that what I believed in didn't have much to do with reality. And I studied Catholicism for a while, and I went on to take on all the other belief systems. I read all the holy books of the Quran and the Buddhists and the Hindus, and I spent years doing that, searching for the meaning of life out there, you know. And eventually, having gone through it all, decided I had to decide on these things for myself, and so I left the holy books behind and started making my own philosophy of life, which pretty much is in the essay you were talking about. I consider myself a humanist, not just an atheist, but a humanist.
Which means?
Means someone who wishes he could work for the betterment of the human condition without reference to supernatural things.
Well, you do often in your poems. I think of another poem that also has been a favorite of mine called simply Gertrude. Would you tell me about this one and read it?
Yes. My mother was one of those saintly mothers that some of us are lucky enough to have. Her name was Gertrude, and she was struck by rheumatoid arthritis when she was about 40, and spent a great part of her life after that in bed or in a wheelchair or something. She was hit very hard, and all of her children, my three sisters and I, did everything we could to help, but nothing worked. And finally, she died at the age of 75. I wish that all the people who peddle God could watch my mother die, could see the skin and gristle weighing only 79, every stubborn pound of flesh a small death. I wish the people who peddle God could see her young, lovely in gardens and beautiful in kitchens, and could watch the hand of God slowly twisting her knees and fingers till they gnarled and knotted, settling in for 30 years of pain. I wish the people who peddle God could see the lightning of his cancer striking her, the small frame tensing at every shock, her sweet contralto scratchy with the Lord's infection. Philip, I want to die. I wish I had them gathered round, those preachers, popes, rabbis, imams, priests, every pious shill on God's payroll, and I would pull the sheets from my mother's brittle body, and they would fall on their knees at her bedside to be forgiven all their faith.
That's very powerful. And in contrast to all of the people both of us know, some of them who find faith a consolation at the time of death, that's intriguing how the human beings walk such different paths when it comes to religion.
When Margie's mother died, she was another saint, but she died regretting to herself all the sins she had had in her life. And of course, she hadn't really had any sins, but a little shortcoming, she forgot to say thank you to someone or something like that. And the whole thing came crashing in on her, and she was convinced she was going to go to hell.
This one is from Karma Dharma Pudding and Pie. Will you read that?
This poem has an epigraph from Job. It says, God will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The poem is called God's Grandeur. When they hunger and thirst and I send down a famine, when they pray for the sun and I drown them with rain, and they beg me for reasons, my only reply is, I never apologize, never explain. When the angel of death is a black wind around them, and children are dying in terrible pain, then they burn little candles in churches, but still I never apologize, never explain. When the Christians kill Jews, and Jews kill the Muslims, and Muslims kill writers they think are profane, they clamor for peace, or for reasons at least, but I never apologize, never explain. When they wail about murder and torture and rape, and unlucky Abel complains about Cain, and they ask me just why I had planned it like this, I never apologize, never explain. Of course, if they're smart, they can figure it out. The best of all reasons is perfectly plain. It's because I just happen to like it this way. So I never apologize, never explain.
Job kept asking why.
Poor thing, yeah.
And never got an answer.
No.
Jesus himself, oh God, why hast thou forsaken me?
Right, yeah.
No answer.
Yeah. I'm not so impervious to the world that I don't know that religion does a lot of good sometimes. Some religious people really are good, and they want to do good. But unfortunately, so many religious people let the religions lead them into hatred.
What gives you happiness? What gives you joy?
Poetry does, music does, theater does, but mostly I think it's just having my wife and living quietly and enjoying being together. I think that's the greatest thing in my life.
Philip Appleman, thank you very much for being with me.
Thank you.
Well, what a treat that Bill Moyers interviewed one of our favorite persons, Philip Appleman. Unfortunately, that had to be cut. There's about 5 poems that you can find on Bill Moyers' website that weren't in the program, but we had to cut some more. So you can go to our website or PBS's website to see the whole interview.
And that's our show for today. This is Richard Strauss's Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks. Thank you, producer Dave McCann and announcer Buzz Kemper. Free Thought Radio is recorded and broadcast from Madison, Wisconsin. To learn more about how to listen, how to hear the archives, or to sign up for the podcast, go to ffrf.org/radio.
And you can join FFRF at our website, ffrf.org, or you can phone 1-800-335-4021. You can get a sample copy of the June-July issue of Free Thought Today, very entertaining. Or just join us and you'll get 10 issues a year. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us.